SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Saratoga Racecourse, on the earliest opening day that we're aware of, I suppose there may be something going back a century that might have been this early, but I didn't dive into the annals to find out. But it's a new era, and this 40 days starts now, and a little bit of different scheduling with the 5 days that everybody is going to have to adjust to. But we start now. We ended Labor Day, and these are about as enjoyable a 40 days of racing as there is anywhere in the sport, here, abroad, anywhere. And the excitement, obviously, around the town and in the area and throughout the horse playing and stakeholding and fan communities, very palpable. Yesterday, we came in, and thanks to Donnie Tal and Pat McKenna, got a terrific broadcast position inside the 1863 room, the new building, and overlooking the track. Plenty of gallopers out there and workers on the main. But yesterday when we were around, the finishing touches, and this goes back to the days when we ran the barbecue, and there's always a flurry of activity and some final painting being done and placement of flowers and all those kinds of things. And there's always horsemen still moving in and bringing the previously empty barns to life, and it's just a great atmosphere. And then, as we had told you, we had that visit with Brian Bouye, and Brian, 6:30 over at the museum at the Hall of Fame, had the signing, he and Mike Veach, and that was really well attended. I ended up staying, came over late yesterday, about 4 o'clock, just for that opportunity to go over to the signing, and got my copy of Brian and Michael's absolutely gorgeous book. And I forgot to weigh it. I should have this morning. I should have gotten on the scale holding the book, and then done the post weight to figure out how much the thing weighs. I'll do that for tomorrow. But it's absolutely beautiful, and they had a terrific crowd. I'm sure Brian and Michael were thrilled. And over at Ciro's, they had the big kickoff party as well. That's been something that's kind of taken different form over the years. Tina and I ended up having dinner over at Mamma Mia, and you could tell it's not mid-season yet. It isn't right on top of, those weeks and weekends when the town is thronged. And this, it's going to be interesting, actually, to see what kind of attendance and what we have these first 4 days. I mean, in fact, I was just talking to Gary. I stopped at the barn, and, Gary brought up a good point. He said, it was just July 4th. There's plenty of people probably, just had little vacations and may have just been away. So, they didn't necessarily come right back this week to, be here for opening. But then there's the people that wouldn't miss it for anything. And the backyard, from what I could tell, the backyard looked, well populated, and plenty of tents. The tent community, as it were, that's become a thing, those pop-up tents. And they're going to be necessary, it looks like, later this afternoon. Very iffy weather-wise, second half of the card. The rain potentially arrives around the sixth race. That's the thunderstorm prognosis, and obviously it's being tracked all over the place. You'll see plenty of people discussing it online. In fact, a meteorologist that's been really helpful, and I'll give everybody his Twitter address. Guy that popped up during the Triple Crown season, Marshall Sterling is his name, and his handle is G1 Handicapping. G1 handicapping Marshall Sterling. And Marshall has got all the bells and whistles when it comes to meteorologic forecast, and he's done a very good job with certainly through the Triple Crown season. He was very accurate. So if you want to follow somebody, and he tracks things all during the day, there's a resource for you. All right. And we'll go from there. We'll see how it plays out, and hope for the best. Certainly with the turf action that populates the second half of the card, including what, 4 out of the 5 late pick 5 races, and the quick call, the grade 3 turf sprint that goes as the 9th. The nightcap is on the inner turf, that maiden 40 for fillies and mares. There's the New York Bred Allowance that goes as the 7th, and the first leg of the pick 5, a state bred allowance as well, sprinting. So 4 of the last 5 races on the grass. I suppose it all depends on the timing. Not going to worry about it. You deal with however it plays out. At the same time, as excited as we are about Saratoga, we don't, during the summer, that we don't live by Saratoga alone. For those of you that haven't had a chance to see what went on in terms of draws and in terms of action nationwide, nice weekend. And this is, again, something that takes a little bit of adjusting, because, Saratoga being run on this second, on the second weekend of July, that's a new wrinkle. So the action at Delaware, where they're going to run the Del Cap, as well as the match series, the third leg of the match series, comes at Del Park. And the handicap came up well, including Escape Clause. Tried the Ogden Phipps. That was a little bit too rich for her. But, of course, coming out of that Apple Blossom, where she absolutely so game against Midnight Bisou, Escape Clause comes to Delaware for Don Schnell. Tyler Bays coming along with, and the 5-year-old mare, along with the late, headlines the Delaware handicap. And a late, of course, righted the ship in terms of victories with her Florida Lee win at Churchill last, and did it with Authority. Blue Prize chased her home. Blue Prize for Nacho Correas, the 6-year-old involved here. Those are your three stars. You've got Arno Delacour, who, of course, had a good weekend. I didn't get a chance to talk much about what Delacour did last week, but Arno with a couple of nice stake wins, and he's got that Smart Strike filly coming out of the Obeah. In fact, you got most of the top finishers out of the Obeah, the prep for this. They all kind of came back for it. Good One Honey, Another Broad, Venti to Go, virtually the whole lineup, the whole superfecta from the Obeah show up here in the Del Cap. So the Delaware handicap, not a grade one right now, but I would have to guess that a win by a late, and even just participation by a late, and Escape Clause and Blue Prize goes a long way to maybe getting the Del Cap its grade one back. Out west, if you didn't notice, I think I said yesterday or Monday or Tuesday about the Los Alamitos Derby that I think I may have said Omaha Beach. I meant, of course, game winner. Game winner is going to be, 1-5, certainly, in the Los Al Derby as he comes back for his tune-up for summer assignments for Bob Baffert and Gary and Mary West. And game winner drew the rail. This is only a 4-horse field, and I'm sure that they did all they could to scare up a 5th or 6th horse, but there wasn't one to be found. Baffert pitched in with Kingley, and Kingley in here with Mario Gutierrez, who's been riding the Tappet colt regularly for Clearview and feeling strong. Hector Palma, a capital account Calbred gelding, and Parsimony for Doug O'Neill. And Doug O'Neill's had been sending out live horses these first 2 weeks with a plum at Los Alamitos. Parsimony in here after and still a maiden. This is one of those funny horses that's won $100,000, but is still a maiden. 0-for-12, but 5 seconds. So Parsimony with a chance to get grade three black type. In Chicago, if you didn't get a chance, the Arlington Million Preview, always a good Saturday. And this card, and in fact, I can't wait to talk tomorrow to Marcus Hirsch. You get the sense, if you've been following the fields and the cards at Arlington, you really get the feeling that the news of the change in financial fortunes for both harness and flat interests in Chicagoland and throughout Illinois, actually all the way down to Fairmont. But things seem pretty okay right now, even in advance of the change in fortune. So if you haven't looked, the American Derby and the Modesty, the Arlington Handicap, the Hatouf, everybody that is local, and a few ship-ins from environs throughout the mid-Atlantic, mid-America, I should say, lining up in here. And the Arlington Handicap, the grade three, they're all grade threes except for the Hatouf, which is a listed stake. But the American Derby with a big, bulky field. And this is going to be fun. It's a terrific day of racing at Arlington. And Indiana, you already know from our conversation with Bill Downs on Tuesday, the Derby and Oaks. And the Oaks actually, I think, ended up getting everybody that they were hoping for and more, because not only did Larry Jones show up with the Fairgrounds Oaks winner, Street Band, but how about Chocolate Kisses for Cassie popping in after that turf try at Belmont in the Wonder again? Yeah. Ian Wilkes has got a emergent filly for the Withams, the Declaration of War filly with Dignity that we told you about when we got speculation from Bill, and then Ian confirmed. A little bit of everything in here. You got an allowance winner for Dale Romans, Shacklet for Frank Jones, Sundays at the Beach, Brendan Walsh, Blessed Again, John Prather, Sally's Curlin for Dale that just broke the maiden as well. Very nice. Vicky Oliver, High Regard. Overflow field for the Indiana Oaks. And then in the Derby, same thing. They pretty much got everybody that was rumored. And a quick rundown, Roland for Tom Amos gets to save all the ground from the rail. Deshaun Parker gets a big opportunity in here. And Parker actually broke Roland's maiden last summer at Indiana. Hero Tiger for Dorochenko. A Hero of Order, which of course was that big upset winner of Dorochenko's in New Orleans, 5 years ago now, maybe more. Peter Miller with Gray Magician comes back out of his Derby try. Market Garden, Merrill Roberts. Frolic Moore, Dallas Stewart with Corey Lannery. Always Mining, as we expected, out of the Easy Goer for Kelly Rubley. Eskin for it, Steve Margolis, and the Brilliant Racing team. They're all excited, of course. Chess Chief, Dallas Stewart again. Long Range Toddy, John Court, coming out of the Ohio Derby third behind Owen Dale and Math Wizard. Math Wizard himself spins out of the Ohio Derby with Edgar Zayas for Safi Joseph. And Mr. Money ended up drawing all the way outside to the 11. And there's your Indiana Derby field. So not just Saratoga, but remember everything else that's going on around the country. And that includes Ellis Park, and no stake there this week. But I got some of those races that we talked about with Ellis to look at later. We're going to take a break right now. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back because standing here, all excited. Not excited? Oh, you got Dave. You got Dave. Oh, so Pat McKenna, forget. You already heard from McKenna this week. You don't need to hear from McKenna twice in 1 week. Well, we could not have a better way to kick off Saratoga and broadcast from here in the... Actually, am I the first to broadcast from the 1863? Now, see, that alone makes it worth it. Getting up at 4 o'clock. What time were you up today? That a boy. That a boy. You didn't drive from downtown. From where are you staying? Where do you think? Albany. And then you settle in. All right. Huh? Yeah, I'm on the air. Yeah, it's a conversational. It's very breezy. Yeah, exactly. It's how's the baby? There you go. Excellent. you know what? We could stay here. You're probably on a tight schedule today, are you? Yeah? All right, sit down. You know what, Deja? The music's great, and we'll turn it down a little bit. Ah, beautifully done. Deja on the board this week, and want to make sure you can hear. You got it? You got audio? Boy. This is Major League Professional Radio at its best. Do you want a microphone too, Pat? You want to sit in? No? You want to jump in if Dave takes a if Dave blows the turn?
Yeah.
take that. Do not knock that cord. That'll be bad. I know. Listen, I make do. All right. Yeah, watch out, court. There we go. Okay, out of the way. All right. The music turns down and the pressure turns up. Dave O'Rourke, we had the terrific conversation down at Belmont. And actually, not that I should start with Belmont news, but the news doesn't stop from Belmont. I had Pat the other day. That was a pretty fun and exciting day with the Islanders and the Long Island Railroad.
Oh yeah, then that's gonna be good. Yeah.
Give us some details from your perspective and what it means for you in terms of planning renovation at Belmont.
Well, it's gonna the train experience is gonna improve dramatically because of the spur. Basically, it was always a kind of a funky connection, really, when you get down to it. So with the new station, it's gonna be great. It'll make it easier for people to get in and out.
The regular service, and that means east and west.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be commuter.
Well, and most importantly, it's going to be easier for Andy, and that's what's most important. In fact, I think the railroad, they part of the press conference, they said, we did this to help Andy Serling so he doesn't have to stop at Queens Village.
You know, I had him in my office for six years up here.
And that was enough. That's right. He had that little baby desk in the side.
We used to play with him every year. We'd make it smaller and smaller. Like I sent Goulet to a preschool to bring a desk in one year.
Exactly.
He didn't even say anything. He just sat down and started handicapping.
Exactly. He's like a one-track mind. In fact, you should have brought his grade school desk from one of the Spring Street Elementary School here in Saratoga.
Yeah, it's probably his mom's house right now.
Exactly. Any feel? I mean, I did see yesterday the news about the earlier departure in the fall from Belmont to Aqueduct.
Correct.
When will you get a chance, I suppose after this meet, when will you get a chance to start to really figure out what's going to happen at Belmont and the timing of it for the building itself?
In the fall, we'll start to get, for lack of a better way, putting it a menu of options, including from the tracks to the building. And, you know, the first set of numbers I'd really like to take a look at are, for lack of a better way, putting it, the deferred maintenance on the building. You know, it's huge. It's 1.2 million square feet. How's the roof? You know, how are the mechanicals? Like the fundamentals. And then, you know, because the building, you want to set it up correct for the next 50 years. So what are those numbers look like? And then we layer on our amenities for our business. And then you have to look at, well, how much space is left here? And, you know, dialogue with the state, see what they might want to do with that. That complements what we have. And, you know, we need the full building 1-2 days a year if you have a Breeders' Cup. The rest of the time, I mean, we're trying to operate on a smaller envelope. There's a lot of it's a complicated puzzle.
No timetable as of now for when things could start and when you would want to have it done.
I mean, ideally, we'd like to start doing some small things for preparation over the winter. Things like the infield ponds, get on well water for future irrigation on the tracks.
Interesting.
But, you know, anything major, I think you're looking 12 months out from that because, you know, there's a lot of a lot of contemplating, hey, what exactly do we want to do and what can we actually do in terms of funding? So there's a lot of stakeholders here.
you mentioned Breeders' Cup, and it also brings up a separate topic in terms of the track surfaces and the options available. There's even before the industry had to deal with these pronounced concerns about track surface and its effect on horses, there was consideration that if Belmont was going to be a through the winter facility, that a all weather surface could be very useful for training, at least for training purposes, and nothing else, and potentially as a racing surface, and even, you know, potentially as the long term surface. Any further discussion on that front?
There's conversations, but you know, the whether it's something you use when you're just in the winter, whether it's something you use when you come off the turf. You know, we have three tracks. A big important factor, especially on the dirt side, is keeping consistent. So, you know, there's no, I don't think there's going to be a near-term shift to synthetics. But there's a conversation if we realign the tracks, because the winter racing, there's two things. One, there's a shadow. Mm-hmm. So on the dirt course, and it's clay-based. So you have to contemplate for both of those if you're going to race in the winter there, regardless of whether it's synthetic or dirt. And then, you know, what's the future? I mean, you don't want to have one oddball synthetic track where you have two other dirts and then you have the Triple Crown to contemplate. So these
Right.
There's a lot of things to think about. And all right, so if we were to realign the tracks, put dirt back, maybe it's the middle track, maybe it's something else. Can you set it up in a way, if there is a conversion in the future, that you don't, you make it, you do some of the investment up front?
Was there any, did at any point during these machinations involving Santa Anita and the Breeders' Cup, was there ever at any point during that situation that Breeders' Cup talked to you about potentially coming here, coming to New York?
Not we were not prepared at Belmont. There's too much
just
going
curious.
On.
I was just curious because that question was out there, you know, in the ether.
Yeah. Vague conversations, but I think they know the situation where they're building the arena. The timing wouldn't be good.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We'll pause on downstate. Let's turn our attention to up here and the excitement, the intrigue, really, and the sort of unusual feelings that everybody are enjoying, I think, experiencing, and that's this early start date, the adjusted schedule, the 5 days a week, which I think everybody has come to understand, even the early critics, that it's going to be a win for everybody. It's going to be good for the horses, good for the backside personnel, good for everybody.
Yeah, you know, we're doing this for the construction. That's the impetus to be up here earlier and run 5 days. And then we're going to see how it plays out.
You so know, it, we're not it, committed it's, to this it's not written in stone.
No, not at all. Not by a long shot.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, then let's talk about what is going on here and the amenities. And, you know, this building came over on Tuesday. And
you like your new spot?
This is fabulous. I'm delighted. More importantly, the opportunity to replace the modular suites and a giant tent was irresistible. And to have a facility that is this modern and has everything that, you know, that the kind of patron would like, that would seek this out.
Correct.
I mean, they were already using and utilizing, you know, some of the same options and accommodations, but to have this as a permanent structure, this was a huge investment.
It was, and part of the challenge is how do you bring in those level amenities but maintain the character and or complement it. And I think we've done a good job. Thank Matt Herf, our architect, I think, did an excellent job in incorporating the building, so it looks like it seems like it fits.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, the bridge is kind of a cool.
Yeah, element. That was a last minute, a late addition or a
wrinkle. It was always in the plans, but yeah, okay. He designed it, and it's a nice little walkover.
Oh yeah,
I think it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's, you know, if some people try to make the walkover, they might get pitched over the side if they're not.
Just don't throw your drink over.
Exactly. That's a good point. The first, I got to imagine that this draws from any number of venues around not just racing, around sports in general, the whole suite concept. There's actually three different tiers of seating and accommodation too. You've got
you've got the banquet.
Hall, exactly.
Replaces the tent.
Yep.
You go to the third floor, it's replacing the suites on the turn.
Yep.
And where we're sitting right now is kind of the new idea. It's a club, and the side that we're on is actually a corporate suite. So this is a format we're going to play with a little and figure out, like, what works. How do you get the flow from the boxes over here? The bar, it's a nice bar. You want it to be lively. So we're going to work on what's the exact right format.
And you mentioned the boxes, which begs a question. Was there gravitation from the boxes, and in terms of seasonal, you know, purchase or rental or whatever? I mean, are there licenses? Is there a license kind of an arrangement in the boxes?
The way it works here right now is you kind of buy a table here in the club, and that gets you access, or you can buy daily access to the club.
Okay,
and we're gonna. Let's see how it
so it's like like Rayo's. People could buy a table and they can use it as much as they want, and they could give it to friends for a day or whatever.
Exactly. And, you know, what we want to monitor is how is that flow? Like, how does it fit in socially while you're here? It's a long day racing.
Yeah.
And people like to move around. So we want to see how it plays out. You know, we have options here. We can play with this asset a little bit on the second floor.
It's a tremendous concept, and the execution looks terrific. And obviously, how many jobs are involved here? How many extra new people were brought in to service this?
Roughly 70, I think.
Okay, because there's everywhere you turn, there's somebody to help you
and guest services, and the basement's packed. I mean, we have offices down there as well.
Very nice. Now it's a winner, and Wednesday, I kind of chided people a little bit that were being critical of, you know, saying, oh, this is pricing out, the typical patron.
Well, I get it.
To me, it's a crazy complaint because nothing's changed.
No, but I mean, we have different types of clientele, and they're looking for different types of experiences. And you know, the air conditioning is a big deal.
Yeah,
when it's
90,
you know, get some people out of the heat. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing. But you know, last year was the stretch. You know, that's a kind of a casual box kind of feel. That's new. The backyard is the backyard.
Yeah,
and you know, this is really replacing the tent and the corporate suites.
That's
it. It's the second floor now. Can we amplify the box experience a little bit with the crossover on the bridge? We think it's a good thing. We think it fits the character of the place. And, you know, it's nice to have.
Well, and a million of different options if people want to explore it. And I'm sure for those that are going to come to visit, you know, if they want, they can come in and get a little bit of an escorted visit, you know, during the race day and so forth. All right?
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, we've got to protect the clients, but, yeah, the people get
Exactly. I mean, Pat will walk everybody around, right? Yeah. You'll be the greeter, right? Like a Walmart. You can bring people around.
But there's actually one with, you know, the players. Oh, here we go.
I'm just laughing.
It's early. We're not open yet.
Well, it can't be. My favorite story on this front is at Churchill Downs.
You got it.
I think it's a test. We were at Churchill. Was this a Breeders' Cup? We were at Churchill, I think, and we had tornado warning, and we had to evacuate the building. Everybody had to go down to the second floor. That one was a classic, and I kept trying to say, you know, can we? I'm doing a broadcast, and they said no. And they said no. You have to leave. So we had to abbreviate we had to basically stop the show. Turn our attention to the you know, the reason we're all here, and that's betting.
Yeah,
and yeah, and handle wise and program wise, there, you know, there are the new wrinkles every year. You know, one thing, of course, that people well received, the Naira Bets Pick 5 being opened up to the to all ADWs and to all platforms,
yep,
which immediately saw, you know, the predictable
bump
influx. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it served its purpose. It was being used as a marketing tool for Naira Bets for those 2 years, basically.
Yeah, we're for years we're hesitant to put in a late pick five because the late pick four is such a popular bet here. So you're always concerned about cannibalization. You have those internal conversations. So we launched it as a kind of a unique aspect of Naira Bets. It made sense as a marketing vehicle. But, you know, we feel like it played itself out. At least I did. And so we opened that up, and now we've been talking about the pick six recently, which gets a lot of feedback. And what do we want to do? And there's been a lot of talk on Twitter, and I monitor it. And you know, when you're playing with the betting menu, it's delicate. It's a fun conversation, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I've had countless conversations with Serling over dinner over stuff like this. So what we'd like to have is, what does the public really want? Do they want one, the other, both? One of the things about the pick six is if you change it, you if you're going to keep a different version of it. Because I've heard that. Like, why would you get rid of the $2 one for the jackpot? Or why wouldn't you just offer both? You'd actually have to put one on a separate card. But I was going through this last night. Is that the worst thing in the world? You know, keep the $2 on a separate card. Bring in the jackpot.
And?
Cents. That's something I'm going to throw out the group today.
Well, where do we – because the option is out there, but where are we to start the meet? I mean,
we don't have final approval for the jackpot pick six. It's something we've been working on the rules for a long time in New York. Every state's different.
No, of course, but the gaming commission.
Yeah, and we're at the finish line, so we would likely get this during the meet. Would we introduce it during the meet is the question. That's you know, something we're certainly going to say it'd be crazy to do that. It's kind of the best place to test something like that
because though. You've got a time. There is a time stamp here of the 7 weeks.
Yeah, and you'll get action in it, and you could actually potentially force it out more often, make it fun. But then, you know, there's the classic pick six, and there's something to that. I mean, there's a tradition to it, and we're kind of like the last one.
Exactly.
So does it harm anything to leave that on the side and let people play it as well? Like, that's something I'm going to challenge our group with. Now, that's tough for the marketing folks, tough for the mutual folks, get a little confusing. What do you call these things? But I think it's something that I'm going to ask them to take a look at. Or I'm going to get some feedback from talking about it on the show.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm really looking for, actually.
Well, I'm trying to think if there's a coherent way to ask for input.
Twitter. It'll come through.
Yeah. Have you I know you're there. You've got, I told her we discussed your address about it, but have you done any back and forth?
Maybe I had another tweet since we last talked. That's about it.
so
but I'm reading.
So your strike rate is still
yeah.
All right. There you go. All right. So no, that's good. Listen,
to me, it seems
good
like
bad.
The best social platform for this type of feedback. The community is very active on it. So. Yeah, you know, I like the criticism. We're trying to get things right. We're not always going to get it right the first shot, but we also want to test stuff.
Sure.
You know, we don't want the menu to be completely stagnant forever.
Well, on that topic, we never really had. I forgot to ask Andy. Even coming out of Belmont weekend, what was the read? What was the final assessment of the 2 day test? The 2 day pick six test.
It was good. In fact, we're going to do a few more. I think Olivato was talking about last night. He's thinking about a 3 day one. The Derby weekend, Saratoga Derby weekend, going through the Sunday.
The one risk you always have is weather.
You can't get out. I mean, what are you going to do?
Just, you know, it's one of those aspects, especially when you're talking involving turf races, which you do want involved just because of field size and competitiveness. And
you got weather with 1 day here. Now we're going three. But
yeah,
if it worked out, it'll be fun. And even if you have some rain on one of the days, it is what it is.
Speaking of Tony and the multi-day or an even multi-track concept, how has the season gone so far of the cross country pick
those
fives.
Those are fun. We do those.
They're great.
We incorporate them with the show. The whole purpose is to keep people involved with the races that we're showing. And yeah, we started that a few years ago, and we just keep doing it. I mean, people seem to enjoy it.
Yeah. No, they're fun. This goes back several years when the NTRA, they had their national pick four, then Magna introduced the Magna five. There was the one season of the 60-minute pick six that Sal Sinatra championed.
Cool.
That
yeah.
was the greatest.
Yeah.
But it was a tremendous amount of work. Four racetracks to try to tie those all together. It was a huge effort. But the public, and I'm the perfect example. I mean, I love a multi-track. It's a unique challenge, and it just attracts people. It's just too interesting.
And it helps some of the smaller tracks that we're able to bring in.
Absolutely,
gets them exposure, and I think it's good for the industry as a whole that way.
Speaking of the exposure and the TV, has there been a way to put a value on what all this expanded coverage, all of the Belmont Live, Saratoga Live, what it has brought back in terms of Naira Betts users and handle numbers?
I mean, the Naira Betts folks, they can show you the metrics when they're on, the sign-ups. It definitely brings value back in that way. But this is a long play for us. Really, it's a development of an asset. It's an asset play. It's a platform that we can, we're getting the sport back into mainstream television. And the other piece is sports betting's emerging, obviously, and that creates a platform for us to play in that game in some form. You know, the question is, what is ADW in 5 years? Is it incorporated into sports books? Is it a standalone niche product? Probably both. But the television gives us another look at that and a way to bring value to partners that we might have in the future.
The overall numbers, the overall engagement at Saratoga and the handle numbers, I mean, obviously it's difficult to, and you're at the mercy of weather because off the turf is always going to savage the numbers.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just said this last night based on some things some people had written on Facebook. Yeah, for years, the association came under ridiculous criticism. Oh, they can't make any money. But then when they've made attempts, and it hasn't really mattered. There's been you know, solid approaches. Going back to Barry Schwartz, really, and to Charlie Hayward, and you know, there's been initiatives to help the players. I mean, Barry Schwartz was on his way, you know, to trim. He kept trimming takeout, and then at that time, the Racing and Wagering Board basically ruined that initiative, and basically the numbers got driven, you know, back up after Barry had made. We were down to 14.5% on the whips.
Yeah,
and you know, people I don't think understand some of those pressures, but in terms of reaching out to players and trying to be competitive from a pricing standpoint, explain what you can do and how your discussions of takeout, how they unfold, and what, you know, from your perspective, what can be accomplished on this front.
An everlasting argument, takeout. Yeah. The argument would be it increases churn. You lower takeout, you're going to increase churn. The thing would be, though, if you're doing it in isolation when your product's sitting along 10 other products in terms of tracks offerings, does that churn necessarily come back to you? So if there was a broader industry initiative to bring it down, and I'm going just purely economics here, then you could really measure the result. Doing it in isolation makes it extremely difficult. But then if you stand back and take the whips out of the conversation, let's talk the horizontals or like a trifecta. Is that pricing really that off when you start looking at parlays on books and what the effective rake would be? Not so much.
Yeah.
It's actually well-priced. And it's more about, can we offer the best product possible within the economic constraints that we have? This is a challenging business. It's a $300 plus million business. We're a nonprofit. everything we make, we put right back in to the game. So we're either building barns, we're building a building like this. So we want to do everything possible to help the sport grow. And part of that is having the best wagering product possible. And that's why, you know, when I'm looking on Twitter or I'm asking for this feedback, it helps. But lowering takeout just in isolation, now bringing in 15% pick five, new products,
sure.
They can be incremental.
That can be introduced at that level.
You know, if we bring in like a jackpot pick six, it's like, how do we keep this takeout at 20 and under? Like, that's kind of a focus. So, you know, would it be great to bring the whole industry down and increase churn? Yes. But I think it's going to take a while for this to flesh out.
A topic that you probably have a better understanding than many management types in the industry, some of the issues that, again, player concerns, the late odds changes, mm-hmm. and the incursion of the computer-assisted wagering groups.
Yep.
Have you addressed or thought about limiting their access? You know, I know that Tampa and Oaklawn are most known for, you know, capping their involvement. What's your read on this, Dave? Because you've absolutely, when it came to simulcast numbers and things, that was your bailiwick.
It's something you want to study, and that pick five was basically a litmus test in that area. You know, a pure retail pool. Now that we've opened it up beyond just Naira Bets in New York, though, it is still just a retail pool.
Well, explain that to people, because I don't think they understood. I don't think they knew that the groups were.
Well, it's kind of a hard marketing message.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, because I think the awareness of the groups has grown to the point where if you said. This is a unique pool that's not accessible to them, that would attract interest and play.
You know, but part of it is, well, now that it's out in a sense, but it's a natural kind of study on, well, if you extrapolate on the pick four to the payouts on the pick five, that gives us the data we're looking for, and we need some time for that to play out in the open market. Now it's out.
Have at it. Yeah.
So then you can take a look at it, and this should be a really good value.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's one of the
reasons.
That's
what we would guess, but let's see. I want to see the numbers.
I got a very difficult question for you that I have to ask.
Yeah.
The Jerry Hollendorfer situation. And I know that it was an anguished circumstance to reverse field and deny Hollendorfer access. Explain the pressures at large. Del Mar is being cited as being concerned about public relations. I've also heard that Belinda Stronach specifically has harangued the major partners to back her up and to back up her initiatives. Where are we with this? And you know, obviously Naira and Churchill Downs Inc. are the other linchpins to wherever those kinds of issues are going to be, you know, navigated. And I know you've had other things to worry about, but I am curious if you've got a feel for, you know, what the association, where you want to be in this discussion.
Well, what we do here in terms of our policies, procedures, rules, like as management, you want a defined set of rules. Here's where everyone needs to play. And then you have the Gaming Commission and the regulators, and that's really their realm in terms. What's going on in California is unfortunate. Mr. Best transferred his horses here, so they're going to run. These are nice horses.
Sure.
We're looking forward to this. It's a tough situation. Now, we were in conversations here at the highest level. There really wasn't a definitive action on our part. The horses were transferred, which, and down out in California right now, you're seeing it emerge again. There's nothing good about this. There really isn't. It's a difficult situation. There's a PR element to this. And we're under a lot of scrutiny, and but we do have a very strong regulator here. We have a very strong board, very good policies and procedures in terms of what we do, in terms of our focus on safety. I think we're the standard, really. See, what happened here in 2012, 2013, we had some issues, specifically at Aqueduct. They brought in an independent panel.
Yep, the task force.
And I think it's the right way to do it. You get management out of it. And then you have experts. They go through. They take a look at everything. And then they come back with recommendations. And then as management, we can come back in and implement. And to me, that's the right structure. It makes me comfortable in that sense because you're getting the best. They're seeing it all clear. And they're independent. And that gives us a new rule book. We put it in play. And it evolves a little bit over time. Like we've been asked the question, or I've been asked the question, what are we doing new up here? Well, we're following our playbook.
Right.
And, you know, as the experts adopt that or adapt that playbook for new data or new findings, that'll be implemented. But consistency is important. And even with, you know, with our horsemen, like, we need to be consistent in how we interact with them, and we need to keep the dialogue open. You know, what's going on in California, that's California. You know, Jerry's primarily a California trainer. We have our own group here, and our relationship is very open with them. My door's always open, and, you know, it's all about dialogue and understanding what the rules are. And I think that's important for us to be successful because, you know, we rely on the track, the horsemen. It's an ecosystem.
And that's a, you know, you reference the outgrowth of the task force, and you know, it's been discussed at length on the show. I mean, going back to its origins, and whether it's with Alan Foreman, when Alan, you know, is on with us, and you know, and in light of what was transpiring at Santa Anita, we kept trying to suggest that a New York task force on safety and welfare would be the right approach, and it never really seemed to take
an
root.
Update to what was done in 13. And
well, but the results,
want to look at.
You're seeing the benefits now. It's 7 years later, and the numbers at large, you know, and you can't hang your hat too much on meat-by-meat injury and fatality statistics because there's vagaries, and they're playing this outdoors, and things happen. It rains too much. It doesn't rain at all. We had a situation. It's got to be 5-6 years ago where we didn't get rain. The turf course got hard, and we had 3 or 4 turf incidents, which is unheard of. I mean, just so you can't ever. You can't. Chuck Simon had the greatest line ever. He said, "We're making a mistake as an industry if we're going to try to use fatality statistics as a marketing tool." That's not what it is. That's not what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be, you know, something that we use as a watchword and as a vigilant, you know, a vigilance issue that we're constantly watching and constantly trying to improve as an industry, and that there's always going to be incidents. There's always it's part of the mechanics of what we're doing, but that we're always trying to do as
you do
good as we can.
You can. You spare no expense.
Yeah.
You complete focus is on putting on a safe event. That task force and the policies, procedures, everything that came out of that. You know, as I took this job, that's one of the best assets I had to work with. I mean, we have a very solid playbook. We have a culture here that's focused around
change the culture. Track. Culture was changed.
I mean, you know, we have Glenn Kozak. I mean, that's the best guy, in my opinion. It knows more than anyone, is on the forefront of data collection, on moisture levels, everything. I mean, you could have him on here. He could talk for 4 hours about this. But it's about, you know, we're a racing company, and like that's at the core of what we do, and it's always going to be our primary focus.
Beyond, and it's funny you say it in that term, you know, a racing and a bet-taking business. What's the update on the sports betting situation?
New York or national?
New York.
Nothing at the moment. They have brick and mortar now, casinos, and I guess they'll get back into conversations about mobile. You know, mobile is the ultimate question because that's how people really, That's how the market really grows in a state. But what we're trying to do is, we spoke earlier about the TV show and position us, because we're content. We're a racing company creating racing content and, you know, on-track live experiences like this. So, you know, we're looking to position our content as best possible to get in the store with the most people. I mean, really, when you look at it.
That's well put.
And, you know, we like our product, and we think it's a really good wagering product.
Do you have any sense that there's going to be an opportunity to be included
in the
sports betting?
Yeah, in some
situation?
Form or fashion, we will. It's at what level? But in terms of a product, yeah, I can't see how we wouldn't be. I mean, people like betting on us, and you know, that's just going to expand the market for us and bring in some new players, like new people, and we're going to get some crossover from it, because I think, you know, if you get into betting on sports, like, how do you not focus on horse racing after you start getting good?
Well, and this is, you know, this gets into back to the discussion about Belmont and about the arena. The people that are having trouble, they're saying, oh, well, what does it do for the racetrack? What does it do for the racetrack? It brings people out to the facility, out to Belmont Park for 40 hockey games, 41,
yep.
A bunch of concerts, a bunch of, I don't know, icecapades, whatever goes on in an arena. You know, the thing will probably be used, 200 nights, a year, conventions, who knows? But people are going to come onto the grounds that have never been there before.
We're the New York Racing Association. Belmont Park is a state asset. This arena is going to do amazing things. One, it's keeping the Islanders in Long Island, which is huge. It's going to increase utilization on the property. There's a train station now. So I think it's fundamental improvement for the viability of Belmont Park as an asset. So we're looking forward to this.
Well, any people that come to the park and there's racing going on, all they have to do is see it. All they have to do is see, you know.
Walk past the building.
That's
look at
it.
The ivy. It's beautiful.
Well, and that's the same thing about here, about all the people over the years I've brought here. And it took literally one visit. And they were hooked. I got friends I used to bring. I would bring them from Montreal, and now it's 20 years later, and they're mammoth. They've come to Belmont every year for 15 years, probably more than 15 years since the 90s. So 20. Obviously maximizing this facility is an ongoing project, and the successes, you know, whether it's the top of the stretch and all these different new introductions. When you get to Labor Day, what are your hopes that you'll accomplish over these next 7 weeks?
So when we get to Labor Day, we'll have the numbers inside the gates. What happened? How did it affect handle, KPIs, attendance, all of that? But, what I'd like to do is a couple weeks after come back up and sit down with the other businesses in the area and see, well, how did it work out there?
For them.
Yeah. I mean, because that's what it's all about. I mean, you come to Saratoga, it's the tracks. Huge piece of it, but so is downtown.
And the region, Lake George. And, I've been telling people to come to Washington County.
Like, you come
on
to Saratoga,
Mondays and Tuesdays.
You hang out for the weekend. It's a holistic experience, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Restaurant push. What's your favorites?
I've been going to Sperry's with Andy for years, 15 Church, Danny Astero, those are all good. I mean, I can keep going. Yeah.
All right. Well.
I appreciate it.
Dave, going to be a terrific summer, and best of luck to everybody involved.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Dave O'Rourke, everybody, and there you go, the kickoff to the season. Let me take a picture, and we'll do it out there on the break. All right. Back after this, we got Dick Powell to come in. I got some Tony Black, Steve Haskin. Dave Grenig's going to be here. We'll get Dave's impressions. Does Dave have a table? Did somebody give Dave Grenig two tables and a banquette? Back after this, opening day at Saratoga.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
summer is one of the best times for serious horse players to bet their races. Saratoga and Del Mar are in full swing, along with other top tracks like Gulfstream and Laurel, and ExpressBet puts them all at your fingertips. Plus, ExpressBet customers can play in exclusive tournaments and promotions this summer, and new customers can earn a $500 sign-up bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in the state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You have my heart, and we'll never be worlds apart. Maybe in magazines, but you still be my star. Baby, because in the dark, you can't see shiny cars, and that's when you need me there.
We're back at the races, and I'm sorry that we had to, Deja, I'm sorry we had to play this great Umbrella cover, but I'm afraid there's going to be a need, apparently, for umbrellas about midway through the card, anticipating thunderstorms and significant thunderstorms as it happens later on this afternoon. So we'll, you know, what are you going to do? We'll just roll with it and, you know, hopefully decisions are made. I know that I saw a text from the racing office that they're holding the MTOs and that they're going to continue to monitor. And I'm going to guess that they will try to make a decision. You know, the worst scenario here is that the rain comes a little later after the sixth or even by the seventh. And you get to a point where there's a lot of it and it's, and they got to take things off. You just don't want to take it off after the pick four or pick five start. So that's always the concern. So we'll deal with it. Let's bring Dick Powell in. And Dick, there was a hope that we're going to have Dick here live. Dave Grenig's going to join us live at 11. But that's all right, as long as we get a chance to say happy Saratoga to Dick Powell. Good morning.
Happy Saratoga. And how refreshing was that interview? I mean, the candidness that he showed has been absent for 5-6 years with the reign of error finally ending. He was just candid, refreshing, not newest stuff. Just David did a terrific job, and you did a terrific job drawing it out of him.
Well, he—that's him. There is nothing. There is nothing manufactured or about him, and he's always been this way. And you know, I've known him. You know, the 10 years he's been here. Just as one of those behind the scenes types. But his experience, Dick, it's a very different a very different executive mentality, because he's had his hands on, you know, several different areas, and so he understands a lot of the mechanics. And you know, Andy, he shared an office with Andy Serling for 6 years, and so because he admits he was not he liked the spectacle of racing, but he didn't really know the ins and outs. And over the time that he and Andy have shared an office, he came to really like the betting part, and so he understands the needs of the horse player and their concerns and frustrations. And I can tell you that actually after we broke, he said, you know, is it okay if I come on, you know, regularly and we can field questions? And I said, how about if we, you know, if we do an advanced billing and we call for, you know, for questions from players that they want answered? And he said that'd be perfect. So we're going to do that. I'm glad. I appreciate you noting, you know, what a good direction this is with Dave O'Rourke.
That's it. Cultural earthquake.
Yes.
The shift that much.
Very much. Very much. Well, I'll be looking forward to seeing you this weekend, I hope.
Yes. Yeah. When you broadcast, are you going to be in the 1863? Are you back home, or what do you think you're going to do?
I've got a couple of options now, expanded options. I've got my little position over by the racing office. We can do that some days. Frankly, if there's days that are a little inclement, we could come here. I'm up on the second floor, all the way at the end of the building, right at the clubhouse turn. And so I'll do it from here a few days. There's going to be... I'll figure out, you know, the schedule is obviously different without Monday and Tuesdays. I probably would. Friday's a funny day. Maybe some of the big Fridays before Whitney and Alabama and Travers. But, you know, I also have to do weekend preview for everybody else, too, for other venues. So, like, for tomorrow, I'm not planning to come and broadcast from here tomorrow because, you know, there's so much else to handle. So I'll probably come at least once a week, and some days, you know, some weeks twice a week.
I promise I will get over there and do it with you live.
Excellent.
In person.
Excellent. Always fun. Always
fun. Well, I might just walk by and wave and keep going. You never know.
Well, it's great to be here, and I know we're gonna deal with a little bit of a weather issue mid card, but you know, so be it. Before we talk other topics, anything today here that caught your eye?
The horse I like is I work early, so I don't have morning lines, and I like doing it that way. I like not having a morning line in front of me, so that's to me distracting. So when I did the card, race 3, number 4, Potomac, just sticks out because
sure.
Going a mile and eight, speed does great. According to Bruce, 33% of the races last year went gate to wide, a big speed bias. And he could be, maybe not the lone speed, but you know he's going to be up there and he draws a nice post. Then the morning line comes out and he's 2-1. I'm like, gee, that kind of took me back. But I don't think he'll be 2-1. I think he'll be a little bit higher because both Ortiz brothers are down on the inside. But I do like Potomac. I think his running style fits the track. He won here going 7. He hasn't won here going 2 times. But he was claimed for 50 and just looks like he can handle first-level allowance horses, especially with the prevailing bias.
That's a fun race, actually. And I haven't had a chance to look at any of the... usually Andy sends out the early scratches, so I haven't looked. But when I wrote the race up, I thought that there was a couple of, you know, couple of notable scenarios. The Rock, I ended up picking the Rock Says, and just because, first of all, Luis Saez ends up gravitating to the Rock Says for Stanley Huff away from Vincento, and that intrigued me a little bit. And I kind of get the sense that the Rock Says can either set up shop and you know, basically stalk Potomac, or if for some reason Lascano, who is more inclined typically to, you know, to ease into a race rather than grab one, you know, by the collar. The Rock says could also, Saez, you know, very adept at taking control. So I ended up siding there, but I thought there was some fun things happening in this. I thought walk-off, what's wrong with walk-off trying to step up, take the next step forward? This is kind of an old-fashioned clean allowance, Dick, right? It's first level allowance, period. Seven horses. I mean, this is kind of a bread and butter Saratoga race. You could open up any decade and this would be kind of typical on a card.
No doubt. And it's the race I gravitated to. So then I'm knowing what the bias is. I'm like, all right, who's going to take best advantage of that? And the problem with bias is, jockey intent. Yep. Who's going to go? Who's going to take back? And some riders have a reputation for going. So, for instance, Jose could go on Vincento because last time on Slop, but that wasn't, you know, that was an okay pace, smallish field, so he was able to get up second and win going away against State Breds and moves up in class today. But Louis gets off, Jose gets on, and he'll probably push, and then his brother's down on the rail, and like you said, the walk-off is in between, and he has two wins. You really, when was the last time you saw Todd 2-for-2? And one was a maiden claim, and one was a starter allowance. I mean, usually Todd starts him out a little bit better, but once he won the maiden claim, you got to take the starter allowance. It's a gimme. You know, it's hanging on the edge of the cup. You just tap it in. So now he moves up to a first-level open allowance. Better field, but certainly bred for it. Street sounds out of an empire there. And he certainly, hate to say it, because I don't want to leave into training there today. Certainly has a wet track pedigree.
Well, and in fact, now you say this, and our friend Marshall Sterling, he's just updated everybody in the last half hour. Now they're actually tracking storms that might even come earlier than anticipated. So, ugh. All right, so be it. All right, we'll deal with it, Dick. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
Well, all right. Let's get our final one last thing. I'll probably circle back to Saratoga with you. Some overall, themes and things you like to watch, particularly early in a meet. But before we do that, the last conversation about Hong Kong and the Hong Kong Jockey Club season, which is drawing to a close.
Hong Kong wraps up on Sunday. They take a two-month break to get away from the worst of the heat and humidity in Hong Kong Island. And it's been a terrific meet, and they've had, from what I can see, pretty good weather. I mean, they've had a couple of rainy days, but not that bad. So the betting's been strong. They announced major purse increases for the entire meet list next year, not just the major stake races. They're raising all the purses for the four international group ones in December, and then they raised everything down to their bottom-level horses. They call them a griffin. I'm not sure why. I got to figure that out. But they're running for 690,000 Hong Kong dollars. Well, that's 100,000 U.S., and these are horses that maybe would be, you know, made in 20 over here. So their purses are going up and up based on a terrific meet this year. So now we got one card left on Sunday, and we have some real drama coming in. Now, Sunday has 11 races at Sha Tin. They're all on the turf. And we have two issues. Zach Curtin, who has been dominating the riders' race, but now he's approaching Joe Moreira's 170-win record season. He had 6 on one day. He followed that up with 5. Yesterday, he had 2 out of 9 at Happy Valley. So Zach now has 166 winners with 11 races to go. He has mounts in, checked that before. I think he's in every race, or all but one. And the guy standing in his way, I mean, he has the riding title. No one else is even above 90. He has the riding title sealed. But Joe Moreira, who has the record of 170, he could have a big day, because he has a boatload of live mounts. And if he has a big day, then Zach doesn't touch his record. So that'll be a lot of fun on closing day, because you got two world-class riders working against each other, but under the rules of Hong Kong racing, they're not allowed to do some of the things that they might be allowed over here, drifting out, drifting in. That's not allowed. You got to run straight. So that's going to be a lot of fun with the riders. And then with the trainers, going into yesterday, it was all tied up between John Size and John Moore. Well, yesterday, Size pulled off two wins. Moore pulled off one. So now Size has 76 winners for the meet. Moore has 74. Size has 8 starters on Sunday's card. Moore has 10. And he has a lot of live horses in there. So we could see the trainer title come down to literally the very last race of the day. So that's another thing that's going to be fun to watch and to follow. Yesterday at Happy Valley, Pertin won 2. Joe Marrero won 3. So he denied Pertin in a couple spots. And our old friend Matthew Poon, who every time I write these Wednesday race results down for Thursday's show, he's had some outrageous long shots. And sure enough, yesterday, Poon had a $30 winner in race 4 at Happy
Amazing.
Valley.
Amazing.
So it's you know, you only notice it because of writing things down, and then, oh, here's Poon again, and then you start seeing the trend and everything else. So I'm actually going to pick a Matthew Poon horse today, which makes no sense talking about the guy bringing in long shots if I'm not going to play one of his long shots. So we will take a look at one of his races, if I could find today. And this is also card number 88, and 11 races will mean 817 races will run at the Hong Kong Jockey Club in the 18-19 season. So we'll get to some picks. 4 races we're going to look at. Race 1, and the print on this form guide is going to, if I'm not blind already, I will be blind. This is on the turf. They're going to go 1,800 meters, but it's a one-turn right-hand race. So they start down a long straightaway down the backside. Then they make the one turn and then about a quarter mile finish to the wire. I like number 6 above John Moore, Zach Pertin combined. So this would be a good way to get Zach off, get his, he needs 4. This would be a good one. He does draw post 12, but he has plenty of time down that long backside run to get situated. Been running against this class level, ran on all weather the last couple of times, but his last 2 turf races were not bad and certainly good enough to win. Now, when you look at the form guide, he's taken off cheek pieces and he's taken off a cross band. So that's interesting that Moore is like making all these equipment changes going into the last racing day of the year. So we're going to go with number 6 above on top. Underneath, number 2, Sky Gem for Casper Founds. Just a logical horse who's been competing against better. Hasn't been beaten that badly. Was 9th his last 2 starts, but only beaten about 5 lengths each time. He does pick up weight, but that shouldn't be that big an issue. And then 3rd, we'll go with number 4, Good Runner's Way from Charlie Schumann. Aldo DiMaia was a good 2nd last time out against this level on the all-weather. Now he's back on the turf, and knows, he's had major traffic problems in his last 3 races. So 6, 2, and 4 in the opener at shot 10. We will then go on to race number 3, and I searched and searched, and I came up with a Matthew Poon horse. Number 13, Telecom Rocket, was only beaten a length and a quarter last time out at long odds. Poon rode that day, drew post 12, today draws post 2 in this, for the 1,400-meter one-turn sprint, and I think... he's not going to be anywhere near the lead. He's going to have to get lucky to find some space. But as they fan out in the stretch, sometimes that opens up a couple of lanes. And the way Poon's been riding, hopefully we'll get one home and we'll get the price that we're looking for. So number 13, Telecom Rocket. Underneath, number 7, Breeze of Spring, has only had 2 lifetime starts, but showed a big late kick both times. Zach Pertin gets the mount on this one. And 3rd, number 1, Shaosan. John Moore is the trainer. Last 2 were kind of iffy, but it was against much better company. So this one drops down. And in Hong Kong, when you drop down in handicaps, you pick up some weight. So it's the balance and accuracy, which is going to be more important. Race number 8. I came up with Poon again. Number 1, Citron Spirit. only being a length and a quarter last time out. That was a, that was against Group 3 company. This was a pretty important race. Shot 10-mile trophy handicap. The purse is, let's see, divided, over $400,000. And does have a nice stretch run, and I think going 1,600 meters is right up his alley. And beneath that one, we'll go with the 5. Good standing, has had a real good meet throughout. Zach Purton rides for John Moore, just the right connection, but he'll probably get overbet, so we'll take the price with the 1. So 1 and 5 in race 8. And finally, the last race of the day, the last race of the season, the Hong Kong Racehorse Owners Association. This also has it's about $200,000, close to $300,000 purse, and these are for pretty highly rated horses going 1,400 meters. I like the 6. Thanks Forever, John Moore and Zach Purton. So we could decide the training title and the record wins for a season title here with Moore and Purton combining on this one. Underneath, we'll go with Mr. So-and-so, is by one of my favorite tires, So You Think. Blissed at home last time out. Passed 10 horses in the stretch. Was just flying late. He comes back and meets basically the same group. And for third, we'll go to the outside, number 12, Cruising. Draws post 3, so don't worry about the 12. Lost all chance at the start last time out, but the prior 2 starts against one level cheaper were pretty good. So 6, 5, and 12 in the finale at Shotton.
Well, excellent. Dick, appreciate HKJC, and we've had the last couple of seasons. We've enjoyed learning and watching and betting, and we'll keep everybody. We'll look forward to the fall and getting started again. Before we wrap up with you, any Saratoga advice early in the meet, things that you watch for?
One of my big things is percentage of winning favorites on the inner turf versus percentage of winning favorites on the Mellon turf. And it's usually statistically significant that the Mellon turf yields more favorites than the inner turf. Now, psychologically, that makes sense, that the inner turf is tighter turns, and you know, you come out of that stretch and you better have some momentum. If you get stopped, you're probably not going to be able to recover in time, where the Mellon is wider, and you could possibly get to the outside, even lose some ground, but still get up in time. So over the years, it's been as much as 10 points, you know, 28 versus 38. I will track that this year to see how the year is playing. It's a little complicated by turf sprints, because they average about 1.5 turf sprints a day. Last year was less with the rain. And that takes away 2-turn Mellon turf races, which I don't mind turf sprints. I'm not against them, but I love the angle of a horse who was on the inner that had a bad trip going 2 turns and now goes on 2 turns on the Mellon, and all things being equal, the course might be kinder to that horse's running style. Now, we don't get that as much because we don't run as many 2-turn Mellon turf races as we do. So we'll run, you know, the typical card will be 3 on the inner going 2 turns, a turf sprint or 2, and then 1 2-turn Mellon turf race. So I know that all sounds confusing. When you throw in rail placements, it gets even more confusing. But it's something I pay attention to, because over, and this goes back, 25 years, when I worked for NIA from the end of 92 to the end of 95, and I used to keep track of this stuff, and I used to provide camera-ready copy, if anyone remembers that, before everything went digital. And they would put stuff in the post-parade program that I was working on. So I've followed it since then, and it seems to be plus or minus a factor every year.
I appreciate it, Dick. And when it comes to that in particular, you know, I can recall our conversations when things changed at Gulfstream, and you were, you know, you were tracking those rail placements and what it was meaning, you know, from 12 to, you know, basically every 12 feet, 12 out to 108, 120 even. And, you know, that personally gave me a huge leg up, because I was finding myself kind of lost out there with those turf placements at Gulfstream, and you were, for BrizNet, you were doing the columns and tracking that intently, and it's always been an area that you monitor, and so it's good advice, and might not come into play immediately, the first couple of weeks of the meet, but for bet backs and for, you know, horses running back as the meet unfolds, it's a good piece of advice.
Yeah, I like using the history of going into the beginning of the meet, because even without a big enough sample size, I still have history behind me, so I can possibly use the angle more so than when everyone else catches on.
Exactly. And all it takes, that the beauty of this meet, it only takes, you know, one nice pop about every, you know, 10 to 12 days. If you can get three big ones here, you know, whether it's three-digit, four-digit, or five-digit, or six-digit, that'll put you in good stead. Dick, I appreciate it. We'll look for you over the weekend, and thanks again to HKJC for another great season.
Okay, Steve, you're welcome.
Dick Powell, everybody. Let's take a break. We're 20 minutes into hour two. We got to get a visit in with Tony Black and then Steve Haskin. And then Dave Grenig is going to be here at about 11 o'clock. And we're sending out best wishes to Dave. Dave's mother, Dave only got up here today. His 81-year-old mother in a very serious car accident, and knock on wood, is doing okay. So we'll get an update from Dave, but best wishes to Dave's mom for a speedy recovery. Send Dave your thoughts and well wishes. Let's take a break. Tony Black, we'll get a quick visit in, and hopefully Tony's, I mean, not hopefully, I know Tony's coming up, because he's going to be on hand for the My Juliet induction. So we can say we're going to look forward to Tony's Saratoga visit this year. Back after this.